Nathaniel, Chapter 2. In his office, Nathaniel was welcomed by a glare from the secretary and a teetering pile of new papers in his in-tray. The secretary, a trim, well-kempt young man with oiled ginger hair, paused in the act of leaving the room.
"You're late, Mandrake," he said,
pushing his glasses higher with a swift, nervous gesture.
"What's the excuse this time? You've got responsibilities too, you know, just the same as us full-timers."
He hovered by the door and frowned fiercely down his little nose. The magician threw himself back into his chair. He was tempted to put his feet up on the desk, but rejected this as being too showy. He restricted himself to a lazy smile.
"I've been at an incident scene with Mr. Tallow," he said. "Been working there since 6. Ask him, if you like, when he gets in. He might tell you a few details, if it's not too secret, that is. What have you been up to, Jenkins? Photocopying hard, I hope?"
The secretary made a sharp noise between his teeth and pushed his glasses higher up his nose.
"Keep it up, Mandrake," he said. "Just keep it up. You may be the Prime Minister's blue-eyed boy now, but how long's that going to last if you don't deliver? Another incident? The second this week? You'll soon be back scrubbing teacups again, and then we'll see."
With something between a scuttle and a flounce, he departed. The boy made a face at the closing door, and for a few seconds sat staring at nothing. He rubbed his eyes wearily and glanced at his watch. Only 9:45. Already it had been a long day. A teetering pile of papers on his desk awaited his attention. He took a deep breath, adjusted his cuffs, and reached out for the topmost file. For reasons of his own, Nathaniel had long been interested in internal affairs, a sub-department of the sprawling security apparatus headed by Jessica Whitwell. Internal affairs conducted investigations into various kinds of criminal activity, notably foreign insurgency and domestic terrorism directed against the state. When he first joined the department, Nathaniel had merely undertaken humble activities such as filing, photocopying, and tea-making, but he did not carry out these tasks for long. His rapid promotion was not, as his enemies whispered, simply the product of raw nepotism. It was true that he benefited from the goodwill of the Prime Minister and from the long reach of his master, Ms. Whitwell, whom none of the other magicians in internal affairs wanted to displease. Yet this would have availed him nothing if he had been incompetent or merely average in his craft. But Nathaniel was gifted, and more than that, he worked hard. His elevation was swift. Within months he had manoeuvred his way through a succession of humdrum clerical jobs until, not yet 15, he had become assistant to the Internal Affairs Minister himself, Mr. Julius Tallow. A short, burly man of bullish build and temperament, Mr. Tallow was abrupt and abrasive at the best of times, and inclined to sudden outbursts of incandescent rage, which sent his minions scurrying for cover. Aside from his temper, he was additionally distinguished by an unusual yellowish complexion, bright as daffodils at noonday. It was not known amongst his staff what had caused this affliction. Some claimed it was hereditary, that he was the offspring of a union between magician and succubus. Others rejected this on biological grounds, and suspected he was the victim of malignant magic. Nathaniel subscribed to the latter view. Whatever the cause, Mr. Tallow concealed his problem as best he could. His collars were high, his hair hung long. He wore broad-brimmed hats at all times, and kept a keen ear open for levity on the subject amongst his staff. 18 people worked in the office with Nathaniel and Mr. Tallow. They ranged from 2 commoners, who performed administrative duties that did not impinge on magical matters, to Mr. Fuchs, a magician of the 4th level. Nathaniel adopted a policy of bland politeness to everyone, with the single exception of Clive Jenkins, the secretary. Jenkins' resentment of his youth and standing had been clear from the outset. In turn, Nathaniel treated him with a cheery impudence. It was perfectly safe to do so. Jenkins had neither connections nor ability. Mr. Tallow had soon realized the extent of his assistant's talents and directed him to an important and taxing task, the pursuit of the shadowy group known as the Resistance. The motives of these zealots were transparent, if bizarre. They were opposed to the benevolent leadership of the magicians, and eager to return to the anarchy of commoners' rule. Over the years, their activities had become increasingly annoying. They stole magical artifacts of all descriptions from careless or unlucky magicians, and later used them in random assaults on government persons and property. Several buildings had been badly affected, and a number of people killed. In the most audacious attack of all, the resistance had even attempted to assassinate the Prime Minister. The government's response was draconian. Many commoners had been arrested on suspicion, a few were executed, and others deported by prison hulk to the colonies. Yet despite these sensible acts of deterrence, the incidents continued, and Mr. Tallow was beginning to feel the displeasure of his superiors. Nathaniel accepted his challenge with great eagerness. Years before, he had crossed paths with the resistance, in a way that made him feel he understood something of its nature. One dark night, he had encountered three child commoners operating a black market of magical objects. It was an experience Nathaniel had not enjoyed. The three had promptly stolen his own precious scrying glass, then very nearly killed him. Now he was keen for a measure of revenge. But the task had not proved easy. He knew nothing of the three commoners beyond their names, Fred, Stanley, and Kitty. Fred and Stanley were paperboys, and Nathaniel's first act had been to send minute search orbs to trail all newspaper sellers in the city. But this surveillance had thrown up no new leads. Evidently, the duo had changed their occupation. Next, Nathaniel had encouraged his chief to send a few hand-picked adult agents out to work undercover in London. Over several months, they immersed themselves in the capital's underworld. Once they had been accepted by the other commoners, they were instructed to offer stolen artifacts to anyone who seemed interested in them. Nathaniel hoped this ploy might encourage agents of the resistance to break cover. It was a forlorn hope. Most of the stool pigeons failed to rouse any interest in their magical trinkets, and the only man who was successful vanished without making his report. To Nathaniel's frustration, his body was later found floating in the Thames. Nathaniel's most recent strategy, in which he initially had high hopes, was to command two Folliots to adopt the semblance of orphan waifs and send them out to roam the city by day. Nathaniel strongly suspected that the resistance was largely composed of child street gangs, and he reasoned that sooner or later they might try to recruit the newcomers. But so far the bait had not been taken. The office that morning was hot and drowsy. Flies buzzed against the window panes. Nathaniel went so far as to remove his coat and roll up his extensive sleeves. Suppressing his yawns, he ploughed through a mass of paperwork, most of which was concerned with the latest resistance outrage, an attack on a shop in a Whitehall back street. At dawn that day, an explosive device, probably a small sphere, had been tossed through a skylight, grievously wounding the manager. The shop supplied tobacco and incense to the magicians. Presumably, this was why it had been targeted. There were no witnesses, and surveillance spheres had not been in the area. Nathaniel cursed under his breath. It was hopeless. He had no leads at all. He tossed the papers aside and picked up another report. Rude slogans at the expense of the Prime Minister had again been daubed on lonely walls throughout the city. He sighed and signed a paper, ordering an immediate clean-up operation, knowing full well the graffiti would reappear as fast as the whitewash men could work. Lunchtime came at last, and Nathaniel attended a party in the garden of the Byzantine Embassy, held to mark the forthcoming Founder's Day. He drifted among the guests, feeling listless and out of sorts. The problem of the resistance was preying on his mind. As he ladled strong fruit punch from a silver tureen in a corner of the garden, he noticed a young woman standing close by. After eyeing her warily for a moment, Nathaniel made what he hoped was an elegant gesture.
"I understand you had some success recently, Miss Farrer. Please accept my congratulations."
Jane Farrer murmured her thanks.
"It was only a small nest of Czech spies. We believe they had come in by fishing boat from the Low Countries. They were clumsy amateurs, easily spotted. Some loyal commoners raised the alarm."
Nathaniel smiled.
"You are far too modest. I heard that the spies led the police on a merry dance around half of England, killing several magicians in the process.
There were a few small incidents.
It is a notable victory, even so. Nathaniel took a small sip of punch, pleased with the backhanded nature of his compliment. Ms. Farrow's master was the police chief, Mr. Henry Duval, a great rival of Jessica Whitwell. At functions such as this, she and Nathaniel often exchanged feline conversation, all purred compliments and carefully sheathed claws, testing one another's mettle.
"But what of you, John Mandrake?"
Jane Farrow said sweetly.
"Is it true that you've been assigned responsibility for uncovering this irritating resistance? That is no small matter either."
"I am only amassing information. We have a network of informers to keep busy. It is nothing too exciting."
Jane Farrow reached for a silver ladle and stirred the punch gently.
"Perhaps not, but unheard of for someone as inexperienced as you. Well done. Would you care for another tot?"
"Thank you, no."
With annoyance, Nathaniel felt the colour rush to his cheeks. It was true, of course. He was young. He was inexperienced. Everyone was watching to see whether he failed. He fought back a strong desire to scowl.
"I believe we will see the resistance broken within 6 months," he said thickly.
Jane Farrow poured punch into a glass and raised her eyebrows at him with an expression that might have been amusement.
"You impress me," she said. 3 years they've been hunted, without anything like a breakthrough, and you will break them within 6 months. But you know, I believe you can do it, John. You are quite a little man already."
Another flush. Nathaniel tried to master his emotions. Jane Farrow was 3 or 4 years older than he was, and just as tall, perhaps taller, with long, straight, light brown hair hanging to her shoulders. Her eyes were a disconcerting green, alive with wry intelligence. He could not help feeling gawky and inelegant beside her, despite the splendours of his ruffed red handkerchief. He found himself trying to justify his statement where he should have kept silent.
"We know the group consists mainly of youths," he said. "That fact has been repeatedly observed by victims, and one or two individuals we have managed to kill have never been older than us."
He placed a light stress on this last word.
"So the solution is clear. We send agents out to join the organization. Once they have won the traitor's trust and gained access to their leader, well, the matter will be over swiftly."
Again the amused smile.
"Are you sure it will be so simple?"
Nathaniel shrugged.
"I nearly gained access to the leader myself years ago. It can be done."
"Really?"
Her eyes widened, showing genuine interest.
"Tell me more."
But Nathaniel had regained control of himself. "Safe, secret, secure." The fewer titbits of information he divulged, the better. He cast his eyes across the lawns.
"I see Ms. Whitwell has arrived unattended," he said. "As her loyal apprentice, I should make myself useful. If you would excuse me, Ms. Farrow?"
Nathaniel left the party early and returned to his office in a rage. He promptly retired to a private summoning chamber and blurted out the incantation. The two Folliots, still in orphan guise, appeared. They looked disconsolate and shifty.
"Well," he snapped.
"It's no good, Master,"
the blonde orphan said.
"The street kids just ignore us." "If we're lucky,"
the tousled orphan agreed.
"Those that don't tend to throw things at us."
"What?"
Nathaniel was outraged.
"Oh, cans, bottles, small rocks and things."
"I don't mean that. I mean what's happened to a spot of common humanity. Those children should be deported in chains. What's the matter with them? You're both sweet, you're both thin, you're both faintly pathetic. Surely they'd take you under their wing."
The two orphans shook their pretty little heads.
"Nope. They treat us with revulsion. It's almost as if they can see us as we really are."
"Impossible. They don't have lenses, do they? You must be doing it wrong. Are you sure you're not giving the game away somehow? You're not floating or growing horns or doing something else stupid when you see them, are you?"
"No, sir. Honest, we're not. No, sir. Although Clovis did once forget to remove his tail." "You sneak! Sir, that's a lie!"
Nathaniel clapped his head wearily.
"I don't care. I don't care. But it'll be the stipples for you both if you don't succeed soon. Try different ages. Try going about separately. Try giving yourself small disabilities to raise their sympathy. But no infectious diseases, as I told you before. For now you're dismissed. Get out of my sight.
Back at his desk, Nathaniel grimly took stock. It was clear the Folliots were unlikely to succeed. They were a lowly demonic rank. Perhaps that was the problem. They weren't clever enough to fully impersonate a human's character. Certainly the notion that the children could see through their semblance was absurd. He dismissed it out of hand. But if they failed, what next? Each week new resistance crimes took place. Magicians' houses were burgled, cars robbed, shops and offices attacked. The pattern was obvious enough. Opportunistic crimes carried out by small, fast-moving units who somehow managed to stay clear of patrolling vigilance spheres and other demons. All very well, but still no breakthrough came. Nathaniel knew that Mr. Tallow's patience was running out. Little teasing comments, such as those from Clive Jenkins and Jane Farrar, suggested that other people knew this too. He tapped his pencil on his notepad, his thoughts drifting to the three members of the resistance he had seen. Fred and Stanley. The memory of them made him grind his teeth and tap the pencil ever harder. He would catch them one day, see if he didn't. And there was the girl, too. Kitty. Dark-haired, fierce, a face glimpsed in the shadows. The leader of the trio. Were they in London still? Or had they fled somewhere far off, to lurk beyond the reaches of the law? All he needed was a clue, a single, measly clue. Then he'd pounce on them faster than thought. But he had nothing whatsoever to go on. "Who are you?" he said to himself. "Where are you hiding?" His pencil broke in his hand.